Hi, this is Bill Lindeke for the Streets.mn podcast, conversations about transportation, public space, and urban design in the Twin Cities. The podcast this week is a conversation with Mark Andrew, one of the leading candidates to replace R.T. Ryback as mayor of Minneapolis. Mark Andrew is a lifelong Minneapolis resident, a former Hennepin County commissioner, owner of a s'more stand at the state fair, and a former environmental entrepreneur for Greenmark, which is a consulting company. He also co-founded MPIRG and served as the chair of the DFL party in Minnesota back in the 90s, and today he's running a very competitive campaign in the wide-open Minneapolis mayor's race. His platform emphasizes sustainability, equity, and economic development. We sat down a few weeks ago in Mark's office in South Minneapolis to talk about his campaign, about the difference between county and city government, the latest on the Southwest light rail train, the city's streetcar proposal, and above all, what makes a good mayor. But before I play the tape, I want to make a pitch for donation. Streets.mn is a 100% made by volunteer website. The podcast is too. But that doesn't mean we don't need help running this site. So if you can, please consider making a small donation on our main page if you appreciate this service, just by clicking on the button at the top left. And anything else, I mean that sincerely, like a dollar is great. So that said, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Mark, I kind of memorized your CV, but I don't think I have it quite down. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're running for mayor, where you're coming from?
Sure. First of all, let me say thank you for having me on. And I love what you guys are doing, and I love the subject matter, especially now that I'm a candidate for mayor. I grew up in Minneapolis. I'm one of the rare candidates who actually grew up here, and I'm the only candidate who also went to public schools here. So I have a pretty deep and abiding connection to our city. I tell people that I'm not from Minneapolis, I'm of Minneapolis. And I think there's a lot to that, and it really had a lot to do with my wanting to run for mayor at this critical moment in the city's history. I grew up sort of in the Powderhorn Park area, just south of Powderhorn Park, about six blocks on 43rd and 12th Avenue in Minneapolis.
That neighborhood is getting to be pretty exciting these days.
Yeah, it's there are a lot of neighborhoods in Minneapolis that are also getting to be pretty exciting because home values are bouncing back, and there's a strong sense of community in our city on a neighborhood basis that exudes a great deal of energy and optimism about the future, and I think that part of the city is one of them. So it's pretty cool.
So you were a Hennepin County Commissioner, and then you became an entrepreneur for a couple different environmental groups, or kind of, I don't know, they're not environmental groups. What are those?
Well, so I went to public school here, went to Fowell Junior High, Southwest Junior High, Ramsey Junior High, Washburn High School. Put myself through the University of Minnesota. And while I was at the university, I was a assistant editorial editor, associate editorial editor of the Minnesota Daily. So I actually got to be an opinion leader at 21 years old and 22 years old. It was wonderful. And I was also the first president of MPIRG at the University of Minnesota, which is
they're still around.
They're still
doing stuff.
Still doing stuff.
His finger at the U, I know about them.
Yep. So I was deeply involved in that. Then I worked at the legislature. Then I ran for public office.
Uh-huh. What did you do with the legislature by chance?
I worked on the Senate Environment Committee, okay. Environment and Natural Resources.
So then you became a Hennepin County Commissioner?
I did.
Yeah, that's where the power's at. Everyone I ask says, well, you really should forget the city level, go straight
to Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, the thing about the county board that is distinct is that they have a huge budget without very much public scrutiny. And so it's still a very healthy decision-making process there. But, I put into place a number of sunshine policies that made decision-making more transparent at Hennepin County. And I think that's been a really good thing for the county. But, yeah, the county is It's still got the last vestiges of Chicago-style bare-knuckle politics.
I kind of want to jump into this a little bit, which is, what is the difference between working with as a county politician and working with the city? What do you see those differences being?
It's a really good question, because the nuances of that are really important. First, the distinction between the county and the city. The city is responsible for physical type services, primarily zoning, construction, bricks and mortar projects, police and fire protection. The county does primarily people programs, human services. So you find me a social malady and I'll find you a Hennepin County program that addresses that. And in addition, libraries, waste disposal. But the role of the county has changed a little bit, and I probably had a little something to do with that, with as the person who initiated the creation of the Midtown Greenway. The county had never been involved in parks or trails before, and when I initiated the resolution to buy the Soo Line Railroad and to clean up the contaminated sites, and then to put the coalition together with the Midtown Greenway Coalition, which was an incredibly effective neighborhood group.
Yeah, we had Tim Springer on the podcast.
Oh, good. Tim is great, and he did a wonderful job there. And we worked very closely. And then I did the coalition with the Park Board and the City Council and the Hennepin County Board, and we divvied up the responsibilities and funded it. And it was it changed the face of county government a little bit, because Hennepin County now is doing transit, which I was also involved in, and they're doing trails, and they're doing green space, and they've got a housing authority. So gradually the city and the county functions bleed into one another a little bit more than they used to.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the conversations I had with people, especially around bicycling and street design, this is true in St. Paul too, not just in Minneapolis with Ramsey County, but there's a lot of tension between what the city wants and what the county says is possible, and the county DOT and the city public works. Do you think Hennepin County's been doing enough to kind of accommodate multiple modes and to think about city design issues around transportation and street design?
It's a very good question to ask, and my personal view is that Hennepin County generally has been above and beyond the call of duty. They have gotten out of their statutory responsibilities. We did it with light rail. We had no authority to do light rail transit, none. We couldn't get the city to do it, and we couldn't get the state to do it, so we went to the legislature, and it took a few years, but Hennepin County got the authority to levy taxes for transit. And the county actually had to set up these regional railroad authorities. We did it under the aegis of a state statute that created spur railroad lines to be part of the farm-to-market system with railroads. And we got authority as a railroad that also got authority to develop transit. So the county has done things historically that were not traditional functions of the county. Bicycling is another example of that. The Midtown Greenway was the very, as you know,
yeah,
the very first one.
And it's amazing. It's what put Minneapolis on the map in the first place. And in our wonderful trail system, the Parks Department's definitely
yep.
gets the credit.
Absolutely.
For.
And, you know, I'm super proud of the role I've played in biking and hiking trails in Hennepin County as a pioneer. But we really need to do a lot more. And I think Hennepin County will be a partner on that, but the city needs to drive it, because it's a physical service, back to my earlier comment. And so if we need to be doing things to change the design and function of streets, even if they're county roads.
Yeah, and a lot of them are. A lot of the important ones anyway are county
yeah.
roads. A lot of people don't realize that when they're just driving around.
Yeah.
You know, you're going from state jurisdiction to federal jurisdiction to county to
yeah.
state, depending on what street you're on.
Yeah, it's true. But at the same time, the city and the county cut a deal decades ago where the county, we didn't deed the land back to the city. The county remains the owner of the arterials, but the city has assumed all responsibility for maintenance. And they secure the funding in many cases. The county does get involved, but it's really been a city function for a long time.
Okay. I'm kind of the main thing in your platform seems to be sustainability, right? I saw your green Prius outside, and I parked my our car Prius right next to it. So tell me about that. What does that mean for Minneapolis? Like, what does a sustainable Minneapolis look like?
We have the opportunity to become truly the greenest city in America. And it's not just with what we do, but it's also in our thought leadership. We really want to be the most sustainable city in the country in a couple of areas. Number one, environmental sustainability, leading with an unprecedented amount of renewable energy and innovative energy efficiency policies adopted by the city. And that's not just relating to city buildings, it's relating to all buildings in Minneapolis. We want to have a truly trailblazing policy in place on efficiency. That's because buildings, and I know you know this and many of our listeners know this, the built environment accounts for 40% of all greenhouse gases. Or more.
Just construction materials are you talking about?
I'm talking about the buildings themselves.
Okay, so not heating the buildings?
Yes, heating and cooling the buildings.
Yeah.
There is further energy use with the embedded energy that goes into some of the products that go into the buildings.
Yeah.
But we're just talking about the building costs of fueling those buildings. It's an immense contributor to greenhouse gases, and it's largely preventable. And so, you know, we will lead on energy. We will lead. I've already proposed solar panels on city, school, and park buildings in Minneapolis. At least 100. We have about 253 buildings, school, city, and park buildings. We want to put solar on at least 150 of those buildings. And if we do, we will have a utility scale renewable energy program. We've already proposed this,
yeah.
And we think we can do this at no cost to the taxpayers.
I like to think about the Jimmy Carter having the solar panels on the White House and Reagan taking them down as like a pivotal moment. You know, so
right.
That would be, I think, at least symbolically, and also in terms of energy footprint, that would be great.
Yeah.
But here's one of the concerns I sometimes have with just thinking about design of a building. So you have a nice LEED building, it's certified gold or whatever, but it's out in the middle of nowhere, and it doesn't have the kind of land use component to it, so that everybody has to drive there, or it's really far away from the nearest anything, the nearest neighbor, right? So
yeah.
How do you think about that too? And that gets to this tricky issue of density, right, which is a hot button issue in any city debate. Is increasing density part of your sustainability platform?
It is, and historically, I've been kind of a smart growth guy, where I've enjoyed advocating for development policies that encompass several different community values: sustainability, reuse of existing buildings instead of replacing those buildings, much heavier focus on transit, basing commercial and residential areas near transit. To encourage the use of pedestrian and bicycling as a form of as modes of transit, those are all things that I think are really important. So density should be a crucial development goal for the next mayor. And there are places in the city where I would support. Really dramatic density.
Like where?
North Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
And infill development opportunities on the south side.
Uh-huh.
Including a lot of the commercial nodes. And so, but not all of them. And I think we need an asterisk, because when historic significance or neighborhood standards push up against the value of density, we have conflict, and we need at that point to have a discussion, neighborhood-driven discussion about what works the best for the community. And sometimes the community preference may not be what ultimately is the best thing for the community. So that's going to be driven by how well a group is organized.
Do you think Minneapolis has been getting the right balance in the last 5 years on that?
generally speaking, I think we're on the right path. I'm not a guy, you know, we have people, for instance, who think the Lake and Hennepin area is overbuilt. I don't share that view. I don't think Lake and Hennepin as a neighborhood is overbuilt. I think we can comfortably handle more density, but it needs to be, we're at a place where it needs to be accepted and supported by the community. And in that area, I'll give an example. I don't especially like what they did on 31st and Hennepin.
Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to like that very much.
Yeah, and I don't think it's attractive. I don't think it fits into the community, and I think it could, we could have scaled it differently and had more density there. But as a mayor, it probably should be stated that I don't think the mayor is the most important player in that kind of decision. I think a mayor needs to cut the city council members enough slack for them to do what they're elected to do, which is work with the community, work with the developers, work out a plan, and come to a conclusion. And you're not going to see the mayor, if I'm elected, getting involved too much in those truly localized development questions. Okay. Sometimes, yes.
So what is the job of the mayor of Minneapolis then? What is the strength, the asset that they bring? You know, because the city council members really do have kind of the most close presence in an issue like a new building or a corner or a land use.
Yeah, they do. And again, I would argue that they should. These decisions should, there should be a great deal of neighborhood access to the decision-making process. It ought to be transparent. And it ought to be efficient. And so I think, I actually think the city has gone a little bit in the wrong direction by pulling neighborhood decision making into City Hall in recent years. That's happened. And
specifically in land use and planning stuff?
And decision making, yeah. Because with the extinction of NRP, that decision making got sucked into City Hall. And I actually think that's the wrong thing. I think we need to be more into the community, and I want to figure out a way to restore some of that local governance feel, neighborhood governance feel that we had under NRP, even though we're not going to have the same pot of money. Mm-hmm. So we got to figure it out, and I'm not sure what the answers are yet.
Yeah.
But I do know that I have a preference to get that out of City Hall.
I want to talk about transit and transportation because there's a lot going on right now with that. The first one is the Southwest Light Rail. There's been a couple different mayoral candidates. I have been what would you say the word would be? Shrugging their shoulders a bit about their commitments to it or saying that maybe we should rethink it, the current route or the current timeline for it. What's your thoughts on that? And maybe even more broadly, how do you judge whether a light rail project is good or bad or where it should
mm-hmm.
go?
I don't know what the other mayor candidates are saying, but my history with light rail is very deep, far deeper than any person running for mayor, because I was around for 11 years in the trenches fighting to get the Hiawatha Corridor established. I was chair of the Light Rail Transit Authority the day that we cast the historic vote to build Hiawatha, and I was deeply involved in the negotiation to make the Central Corridor the second light rail corridor, the one that's currently under construction. So I've been involved in that issue for a very, very long time from the very beginning, and so I have pretty strong views on what the LRT system ought to look like and what it should do and what it shouldn't do. And I'll be honest with you, back then when we were creating the Hiawatha LRT corridor, one of the corridors that was being discussed was the Southwest. And I did not favor that, even though the county bought the railroad land. We bought that from the old Chicago and Northwestern Railroad. We bought 23 miles of it for like cheap. You know, I can't remember how much, but it was really inexpensive. Just like the Soo Line on what is now the Midtown Greenway, we spent like $3.5 million buying it. But I mean, it was really, really inexpensive, and it only cost a couple $1 million to clean it up, from St. Louis Park to Hiawatha Avenue. And so, you know, we didn't have the Sable Bridge, and we didn't have a way to get across Hiawatha at that time. But we spent about $20 million on the Midtown Greenway. Today we have hundreds of millions of dollars of tax base along the Greenway, or because of the Greenway. It's been phenomenally successful. And I was also involved in the establishment of the Kenilworth corridor, which is now under fire for the light rail and the co-location. I left the county board voluntarily 14 years ago to go into the private sector. And I left with the understanding that the freight rail would be diverted into St. Louis Park. That was the understanding. Now, there was no written contract, and things hadn't evolved enough by the time I left the county board for there to be a final agreement on it. But the railroad had agreed. St. Louis Park had agreed. We even helped clean up a contaminated site up there, the Golden Auto Parts site. I believe we used Superfund money to help clean it up, and then we were going to divert the freight rail up there. So for me to see that there's a current discussion at the Met Council and with other people to co-locate freight rail and the Kenilworth bike trail and the new Southwest LRT line, to me, is unthinkable, unworkable, and unconscionable. We can't do that, and I won't support it, doing all three of those things. So we've got to come up with a way to deal with that. I still favor putting the freight rail into St. Louis Park. I'll be honest about my feelings about the Central Light Rail or the Southwest Light Rail Corridor. I didn't like it 20 years ago, and I didn't like it 15 years ago because the ridership numbers were hard to defend, given the cost. Yeah. But the county board has voted for it. The numbers have changed somewhat, and it's at the Met Council, so I am not standing in the way of the Southwest Corridor if freight rail goes. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So that's pretty clear statement, I think. You know, and there's, you know, if you get elected, when you get elected, I guess I should say, because I'm in your office, but the train will probably already be down the tracks a little bit, and not much of the mayor of Minneapolis will be able to do at that point. I'm just guessing. I'm curious to look back at the Hiawatha light rail, though. I mean, if you're designing a light rail system for the city of Minneapolis, what was the biggest mistake or thing you wish you could go back and change about the Hiawatha light rail and the way that it's turned out 10 years later?
My preference then, Hiawatha was my second choice. I wanted to run LRT down 35W from downtown to the Crosstown Commons. And then I wanted to jump off the freeway and onto the railroad tracks through Richfield and then out to Eden Prairie. It was the least expensive, and it had by far the highest ridership numbers. But Governor Carlson and the Republican-controlled House of Representatives wanted to expand 35W so people from Burnsville could get downtown 2 minutes faster, and they won. And so we were not able to do that. I actually formed an advocacy group called South Minneapolis Officials for Light Rail Transit and elected officials for Light Rail Transit. But
what was the acronym? It's like
I can't remember. I don't know. It would have been good, whatever it was. But, you know, we got slam dunked on that one, and we didn't control the governor's office or the legislature. So the Hiawatha was the fallback. The ridership numbers on Hiawatha were not as impressive, not nearly as impressive. And so, you know, I was a little bit skeptical. But we reached a compromise agreement, and we all advocated for it, and we passed it on an overwhelming vote of the county board, and it was one of the most significant days in my elected career that we did it. So what would I change? I would have changed the alignment. Today, I think it has been done really well. I chaired the downtown committee that established whether it was going to run down Fifth Street or whether it was going to run north-south. And so we landed on Fifth Street. But there was a time when we were thinking about putting it on Marquette. And I kind of liked that originally, but the studies and preliminary engineering analysis suggested Fifth Street would be the best place from a cost perspective and a convenience perspective. So that's where we went.
Great. What do you feel about streetcars in the current streetcar plan in the city?
I'm a fan of the judicious use of streetcars.
Why?
I think they are a great way, even though they're not rapid transit, it's not fast transit, but it's effective transit when applied strategically. And I consider it to be a great people mover option if it's in the right part of the city. And I'm very attractive to a streetcar line going from South Minneapolis on 46th Street downtown and out Central Avenue to the boundary of the city, because I think it would be a boon to Northeast Minneapolis.
Yeah, connectivity. That's
connectivity is where it's at.
Yeah.
And you just said one of the most important words in the lexicon of a modern mayor.
Uh-huh.
Is that we have to have, there are two words. One is connectivity, and the other is collaboration, the ability to collaborate. And if we get a mayor who understands the power of connecting people, who also knows how to do the collaborations required of a modern city to get the money and the buy-in and the critical mass to make these projects happen, it's a very bright future indeed for the city.
It's interesting, the streetcar, especially the funding mechanism, it's kind of a unique feature. Minneapolis is the only city that has this sort of ability to do a value capture district. And there was a recent, the Met Council Chair, Susan Haig, recently wrote a letter to the city saying, don't be taking our money, is basically what that letter seemed to be saying. Or there was some jurisdictional boundaries being drawn and lines in the sand. I don't know. It was an interesting read.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is Minneapolis doing the right thing by kind of rattling a few trees, trying to be more assertive about transportation, especially capital costs at the beginning?
Yeah, and I think the mayor deserves some credit for trying to get this done. He really wants to have the streetcar as a fait accompli project before he leaves office. I want to do a streetcar line. Don't know if I want to be on the Nicollet Mall, and I know the mayor is talking about the Nicollet.
Why don't you like that idea?
I don't know that we get the value of the mall as a transit driven mall as opposed to a pedestrian mall from a retail point of view and from a tourist point of view, visitors. But I'm not sure yet. And I'll be honest with you, I've got to make my mind up. The mayor and I have met once on the subject, and we're going to meet again on the subject. And there are two things on the streetcars that I want to be very careful of. I want to be thoughtful. One is, are we going to run it down the mall or are we going to run it down Hennepin? And number two is the funding mechanism. And I'm very impressed by the creativity of the value capture approach, but I'm also mindful of what former council president Paul Astro wrote in the Star Tribune a couple of weeks ago about the city making commitments, long-term commitments on things that don't have a guaranteed revenue stream. And that would include several things in the city, the convention center, the Target Center, the football stadium, the streetcars. And so these are all things I support. So I'm not being critical. I'm just saying we need to be careful in our financial analysis by being conservative. And I need to make sure those numbers are, that I'm comfortable with those numbers.
What's your biggest concern about the Viking Stadium right now, going forward with it?
The same as the concern of many members of the public. I don't think we got such a great deal on the financing of it. I think there's a strong likelihood if the Wilfs clear the investigations that they'll never really have any personal money, skin in the game. And this is common with stadium owners around the country. I've done a lot of work with sports facilities in my environmental work. I have a green marketing company, and we've done work with sports teams around the country. And so, you know, we understand what the economics are and the realities. But the stadium wasn't a very favorable financing plan for the taxpayers of Minneapolis. For one thing, we paid twice. We pay the state's share that goes into financing the stadium, and we have to pay the city share. And so I think that's patently unfair. And so I didn't like that. But I'm glad we have a stadium in Minneapolis going in.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of running out of time, Mark. What are your where's your campaign at right now, and what are you looking forward to in the next couple months?
I think I can speak for everyone on our campaign that we're looking forward to November 6th, because that's the day after the election.
Oh, the day after?
Yeah. We have about 83 days left. I think our campaign is very lively. We're a very innovative group of people. It's a very young campaign. And I believe we are doing very well. I think we are striking a chord with key constituencies in the city. We do very well with young people. We do very well with progressives. We do very well with the business community, because they know that we know that we can't grow jobs without them. And so we've got several constituencies that I think are very healthy, high voter turnout constituencies that put us in a good situation right now. And everybody else is good, and I want to make sure I say that we have a lot of smart people running for mayor. And
it's ranked choice this year too, which means you can't trash talk anybody. Is that right?
Well, this is a political campaign. We have to, believe it or not, the highest moral calling of a candidate is to point out the differences between the candidate and their opposition. Mm-hmm. And so we are literally ethically obligated to do that. And there are some differences.
I covered the Ryback versus McLaughlin race, how many years ago that was?
05.
05, yeah. And I don't know, it was really hard for me to discern differences. I went to a couple of the debates. I struggled with it, but yeah.
And in the mayor's race, it's true, we're all fairly close philosophically. But in the case of a mayor, the style and the persona and the energy level and the creativity are critical but intangible elements that are necessary in a modern-day mayor. Modern-day mayor has to have several qualities. They have to have a really bold vision, big, bold vision. They have to have a proven record of being able to collaborate with other groups of people. And finally, they have to have the chutzpah to actually deliver and get the proposal out there and take the risk. Every time a proposal for a project is made by a mayor, it's a risk. And we've had many officials over the years around the country who have been in office a long time because they chose not to make decisions. And it's important that a modern-day mayor be willing to make the decision.
Great. Well, thanks for talking to me today, Mark.
Thank you. It was really fun being with you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Streets.mn podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas, you can comment on Streets.mn, on Twitter at StreetsMN, or email me at bielandkey@gmail.com. So long from South Minneapolis.